Here we are, hour number two. As we continue to update you to the very best of our ability, scientifically, anecdotally, and certainly, well, we call it speculatively. That's all we can do, being honest about it all. Here's one more I'm going to do, and then we'll play a video here. They say these shots don't shed. A couple of weeks ago, I visited a client who had AZ, which is AstraZeneca, 2 days before. I was in her home for about an hour and a half. After I left, I started getting a headache, which got progressively worse. By evening, I was in bed with a thumping headache and slept very early in the evening. Next day, I felt tired and groggy as if I had a hangover. Yesterday, I saw a different client who had the AstraZeneca shot 2 days ago. I was only in his home for 15 to 20 minutes. I got home from work around 4 p.m. and went straight to bed and slept for an hour. Woke up, had a fever, hot and cold. I just didn't feel right at all. Today, I'm feeling tired and again like I have a hangover. My body feels weak, like I need food to fuel it. Yet I've had a good breakfast. Is this all just some kind of coincidence? Erica, what do you think?
Well, if that's not shedding, I don't know what is. You know, it's...
That's it. Exactly.
The question
right.
is, you know, what is the culprit? Is it the spike protein? Is it something else?
And that's a very fair statement. We don't know. As I said, we have to speculate. But I think we're doing, all of us in this field and all the other doctors out there, they're trying very hard to sort this out and to make some sense of it all. And all right, here we go. This is Dr. Byram Bridle. We've played this before, but I want to play it again because it's very important. So here we go. Dr. Byram Bridle on shedding.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Alex. Yeah, as you said, I'm very much pro-vaccine, but always making sure that the science is done properly and that we follow the science carefully before going into public rollout of vaccines. I hope you let me run with this a little bit, Alex. I'll forewarn you and your listeners that the story I'm about to tell is a bit of a scary one. This is cutting-edge science. There's a couple of key pieces of scientific information that have become privy to just within the past few days that has made the final link so we understand now, myself and some key international collaborators, we understand exactly why these problems are happening and many others associated with these vaccines. And the story is a bit of a scary one, so just to brace you for this. But I'm going to walk you through this. The science that I'm going to be talking about. I don't have the time here to describe exactly the scientific data, but let me assure you that everything that I'm stating here, or that I'm going to state right now, is completely backed up by peer-reviewed scientific publications in well-known and well-respected scientific journals. I have all of this information in hand. I'm in the process of madly trying to put it all into a document that I can hopefully circulate widely. So your listeners are going to be the first to hear the public release of this conclusion, and I can back it up with science. So this is what it is. The SARS coronavirus 2 has a spike protein on its surface. That spike protein is what allows it to infect our bodies. That is why we've been using the spike protein in our vaccines. The vaccines we're using get our cells in our body to manufacture that protein. If we can mount an immune response against that protein, in theory, we can prevent this virus from infecting the body. That's the theory behind the vaccine. However, when studying the disease, severe COVID-19, everything that you've just described, heart problems, lots of problems with the cardiovascular system, bleeding and clotting is all associated with severe COVID-19. And looking and doing that research, what has been discovered by a scientific community is the spike protein on its own is almost entirely responsible for the damage to the cardiovascular system if it gets into circulation. Indeed, if you inject the purified spike protein into the blood of research animals, they get all kinds of damage to the cardiovascular system, and it can cross the blood-brain barrier and cause damage to the brain. Now, at first glance, that doesn't seem too concerning because we're injecting these vaccines into the shoulder muscle. The assumption, all up until now, has been that these vaccines behave like all of our traditional vaccines, that they don't go anywhere other than the injection site. So they stay in our shoulder. Some of the protein will go to the local draining lymph node in order to activate the immune system. However, this is where the cutting-edge science has come in, this is where it gets scary. Through a request for information from the Japanese regulatory agency, myself and several international collaborators have been able to get access to what's called a biodistribution study. It's the first time ever that scientists have been privy to seeing where these messenger RNA vaccines go after vaccination. In other words, is it a safe assumption that it stays in the shoulder muscle? The short answer is absolutely not. It's very disconcerting. The spike protein gets into the blood, circulates through the blood in individuals over several days post-vaccination. It accumulates, once it gets in the blood, it accumulates in a number of tissues such as the spleen, the bone marrow, the liver, the adrenal glands. One that's of particular concern for me is it accumulates at quite high concentrations in the ovaries. And then also a publication that was just accepted for a scientific paper, just accepted for publication that backs this up, looked at 13 young healthcare workers that had received the Moderna vaccine, which is the other messenger RNA-based vaccine we have in Canada. And they confirmed this. They found the spike protein in circulation, so in the blood of 11 of those 13 healthcare workers that had received the vaccine. What this means is, so we have known for a long time that the spike protein is a pathogenic protein. It is a toxin. It can cause damage in our body if it gets into circulation. Now we have clear-cut evidence that the vaccines that make our bodies, or the muscles, or the cells in our deltoid muscles, right, manufacture this protein. The vaccine itself plus the protein gets into blood circulation. When in circulation, the spike protein can bind to the receptors that are on our platelets and the cells that line our blood vessels. When that happens, it can do one of two things. It can either cause platelets to clump, and that can lead to clotting. That's exactly why we've been seeing clotting disorders associated with these vaccines. It can also lead to bleeding. And, of course, the heart's involved. It's part a key part of the cardiovascular system. That's why we're seeing heart problems. The protein, it can also cross the blood-brain barrier and cause neurological damage. That's why also in the fatal cases of the blood clots, many times it's seen in the brain. And also of concern is there's also evidence of a study. This has not yet been accepted for publication yet, this one. They were trying to show that the antibodies from the vaccine get transferred through breast milk. And the idea was this may be a good thing because it would confer some passive protection to babies. However, what they found inadvertently was that the messenger RNA vaccines actually get transferred through the breast milk. So delivering the vaccine vector itself into infants that are breastfeeding. Also, with this, now we know the spike protein gets into circulation. Any proteins in the blood will get concentrated in breast milk. Looking into the adverse event database in the United States, we have found evidence of suckling infants experiencing bleeding disorders in the gastrointestinal tract. So,
okay, let me pause you there because I've only got about 45 seconds left. I mean, the bottom line, this
sure.
is scary a lot of people.
I'll
this
wrap
will
it up.
Freak
this
a lot of people
important,
out.
This message, yes. Yeah, so this has implications for blood donation. Right now, Canadian Blood Services are saying people who have been vaccinated can donate. We don't want transfer of these pathogenic spike proteins to fragile patients who are being transfused with that blood. This has implications for infants that are suckling. And this has serious implications for people for whom SARS coronavirus 2 is not a high-risk pathogen, and that includes all of our children. In short, the conclusion is we made a big mistake. We didn't realize it until now. We thought the spike protein was a great target antigen. We never knew the spike protein itself was a toxin and was a pathogenic protein. So by vaccinating people, we are inadvertently inoculating them with a toxin. Some people, this gets into circulation, and when that happens in some people, it can cause damage, especially to the cardiovascular system. And I have many other, I don't have time, but many other legitimate questions about the long-term safety, therefore, of this vaccine. Right. For example, with it accumulating in the ovaries, one of my questions is, will we be rendering young people infertile? Some of them.
And the answer to that is yes. And the answer to the other question is, did they know about this in advance? They, the makers of this Holocaust? Yes, They sure as hell did know. That's me speaking for myself, not for Erica or anyone else. Comments on this?
I agree. I find it hard to believe that, well, I don't know. Maybe some of these doctors genuinely did not know. But there was plenty of research prior to the rollout of the vaccine that was showing that the spike protein was contributing to death in people that were diagnosed with COVID. It was ending up in the brains and the hearts. And in fact, there was one study that showed, and this was somebody that at autopsy was diagnosed with Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, which is the human form of mad cow disease. And the spike protein was recovered from the brain tissue. Now, did he already have Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease and was in progress when he got COVID, or did the spike protein from the coronavirus induce that pathology or that disease? So there was already some evidence, maybe quite a bit of evidence, showing that the spike protein all by itself was problematic and may have been the most
chosen
problematic
for
part
exactly
of the virus.
That reason.
Right.
Maybe chosen for exactly that reason by the people.
It's a designer protein. It is,
yes,
absolutely a designer protein.
All right. Here's a paper. This is from a site called Science 2.0. And it is one of the biggest lies I have ever seen. I'm just going to quote a little bit of it. Erica knows about this article as well. It's called The Thorny Problem of COVID-19 Vaccines and Spike Proteins. I'm just going to read the opening, then I'm going to jump to the punchline. Almost since the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic, a piece of the SARS-CoV-2 virus called the spike protein has drawn interest from researchers and healthcare professionals. New research by Yuang Li and colleagues, published in the journal Circulation Research, sheds new light on how the spike protein might play a critical role in the widespread damage caused by SARS-CoV-2. All right, now I'm going to jump ahead. The article starts out objectively, and then it steers in the wrong direction. This is a hit piece, so to speak. I'm going to jump up to redesigning the spike protein. This is a paragraph, a couple of them. The spike protein attaches SARS-CoV-2 to cells through a receptor called ACE2. In order to fully interact, the spike protein must undergo a conformational change. Conformation. A research team led by Dr. Barney Graham from the Vaccine Research Center at the NIH, National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, that's the NIAID, created an engineered form, of the spike protein that is unable to make the shape change required to effectively bind to cells. The Pfizer, BioNTech, Moderna, Novavax, and J&J vaccines all use this, sit down, inactivated spike protein, which means any spike protein that is produced by the vaccine is not able to be activated. This safety switch limits the ability of the spike protein to bind to ACE2 and limits its ability to cause damage.
There's the punchline.
Unbelievable.
Well, in an overwhelming amount of clinical evidence contradicts that statement, not to mention the study where they took the 13 healthcare workers who were vaxxed and then measured the amount of spike protein in their blood within one day of getting the vax. 11 out of 13 had detectable levels of spike protein, not antibodies, spike protein. So this idea that the spike protein does not leave the cell or does not become detached from the cell membrane is completely flawed.
This is a huge hit piece on reality.
Nothing backing up these statements. I mean, maybe they thought that this should work, but it was never tested. It was never evaluated, and now we know that it's patently false. And yet, nothing's changed. The beat goes on.
Here's a kicker. In addition to engineering the spike protein so it cannot be fully activated, you feel better out there, everyone? In addition to engineering the spike protein so that it can't be fully activated, the protein is tagged with an extra piece called a transmembrane anchor. The transmembrane anchor allows the spike protein to appear on the surface or the membrane of the cell, but it is held in place by the anchor. This prevents the spike protein from drifting away and creates a fixed target for the immune system to recognize the foreign protein and destroy it.
That's nice, but it's untrue.
The science fiction.
Yes. Protein is cleaved, and then it's set loose, and it circulates throughout the body. We have the proof,
right,
and we have the evidence of all these people suffering the consequences of free-floating spike protein.
And do remember the innocent bystander angle. This is very important for all of you. And for all of you listening who are vaccinated, I don't want you to feel like you need to be separated, either group. You need to use common sense. That's all. Until we get this somehow figured out to where it's not going to create grievous damage to one or the other. We know now that the majority of so-called new cases of coronavirus are among the fully vaxxed, right?
Yep.
We know this. All right. Here's a video. This is a pathologist and his summary of what these injections do to the brain and other organs of your body. This is from something called the White Coat Summit, the one-year anniversary. This is Ryan Cole, MD.
Howdy, howdy. I'm Dr. Cole. It's an honor to be here with my colleagues, some brilliant minds, as you've already seen, so I'm humbled to be on the stage with them. I'm excited to be here with attorneys that fight for freedom as well, and it's fantastic to be in a room with smiling faces not covered with unnecessary cloth that does nothing. So who is this random doctor on stage? I'm Dr. Ryan Cole. I'm a Mayo Clinic trained board certified anatomic pathologist, clinical pathologist, dermatopathologist, way too many years of school. Also did some PhD research in immunology. So immunology, virology is right up my alley. So if you want mechanisms of action and how things work and whatnot, go ahead and pick my brain. Anyway, so what about the vaccine? What about deaths? You know, Dr. Urso had alluded to that we have some concerns about these high numbers. What's going on? We see the headlines, like Dr. Merritt mentioned, 13-year-old 3 days after a shot dies, 15-year-old dies of a heart attack. You know, 10 children so far in the VAERS reports, and probably more now, death after heart attacks, 39-year-old mom of three, death after the shots, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we see the headlines. So here's the question. One would think in this era of a new virus and a new experimental, I don't even like calling it a vaccine, an investigational vaccine, a fake vaccine, okay, I can a clot shot, a needle rape, whatever you want to call it. Okay, so going to the VAERS data, 11,000 deaths, 12,000 deaths, 45,000 deaths. In the literature so far, about a month ago, first post-vaccine autopsy. Out of 11,000 deaths? Are you kidding me? Is this science anymore? No. No, medical technocracy. Fear, suffering, shot. That's all you're supposed to have. Listen to us and that's all you get. No. So how can we do science if we are not looking? One cannot find that for which they do not look. Where is the funding? And the independent pathologist, the pathologist, you know, I do a lot of biopsies, cancer diagnostics, whatnot. We never complain about getting too much tissue. Well, when you get the autopsy, you get all the tissue. But guess what? You find all the answers, too. But if we're not looking, we're not going to find it. And if they're saying, oh, don't autopsy that. It wasn't the vaccine. These are not the droids you're looking for. Don't look here. So how in God's green earth are we going to know? Where is the funding? Autopsies are expensive, yes. But if we have billions to advertise a clot shot to children that don't need it, Dr. Fauci, where's the funding for science? Okay, when an unapproved new drug therapy vaccine is put onto the market, we need to use the French legal system, guilty until proven innocent. So if there's an adverse reaction, if there's a death, it happened from that therapy until you prove that it didn't. And we are doing the look the other way, follow the money. Who's behind this? I don't know. I'm not going to conspiracy theory anything. I'm not going to be political, but I'm saying if you want the data, then you need to use that French legal system and say, this is guilty until we prove it didn't happen from something else. And we're doing just the opposite right now. Okay, what about the spike protein? We're giving a sequence, a gene sequence, into the bodies of human beings. And this sequence goes into our deltoid, and we're informed that it has a little anchoring protein, and once that is translated and makes a little protein and it's on the surface of your cell, it stays there. Well, guess what? It doesn't. And there are studies, and of course the fact checkers are like, oh, this isn't true. I'm a scientist. Don't ask the journalist, ask the scientist. Okay? So this spike protein doesn't stay just in the deltoid. The spike circulates in your blood. It lands in multiple organs in the body. And you know what happens? That spike protein, without the body of the virus present, we did studies in lab animals. In the lab animals, just in injecting the spike, with no body of the virus, the spike induced the same disease as COVID-19 induced. The same lung disease, the same vascular disease, the same heart disease, the same brain disease. The spike is the toxin. So again, why are we injecting something into the human body that is the toxin? It is the toxin. It causes the disease. This isn't a vaccine. Okay, so we know that the virus, everybody's heard about this ACE2 receptor. Here's an example. So on the left-hand side, this is one of the cells that lines your blood vessels. I'll show you a chart in a minute where we have ACE2 receptors. So on the left-hand side, you see kind of in the corner of that upper grid and the bottom grid, these nice smooth lines. On the right-hand side, this is what the spike protein, just the spike alone from the vaccine, is doing to the mitochondria of your cells. That's the engine of your cells. That's what gives you energy, the power of your cells. Compare the left, the smooth, nice, put together. Compare the right, blown apart, fragmented. That's from the vaccine, not from the virus, from the vaccine. Okay, so here's the human body. You can see the plethora of sites where we have ACE2 receptors. Now think about it. I mentioned they tell us, oh gosh, the spike stays in your deltoid. It doesn't. It circulates. In the Harvard study in 13 nurses, they showed it circulating for at least 2 weeks. A lot of people lack something called mRNAs, an enzyme that breaks down the RNA. So it may be circulating for even longer. Now you hear, well, gosh, they died, you know, just so long after the shot. So, you know, it was 2 weeks, 3 weeks, Hank Aaron, whoever. You know what? That spike's circulating. They tried to pull the wool over our eyes and say, well, it couldn't have been the shot. We're too far out. Not if the toxin's still circulating. Not if the toxin's still circulating. The spike is the toxin. Damage to the lungs, like I mentioned. On the left-hand side, healthy lung tissue. Nice spaced out. See, this is what pathologists do. We look at all these cells all day long. It's kind of fun. We're nerds this way. On the right-hand side, see how much more purple and blue that is? That's all inflammation. Why? ACE2 receptors in that lung, spike binding to it, inflammatory response, immune system attacking your own body, disease from the spike, disease from your own clot shot investigational vaccine. They keep lying to the American public by calling it a vaccine. They keep taking the word investigational off. It's what they call it in the emergency authorization. They keep not calling it what it is.
Remember the term multi-organ system inflammation. That's what he's talking about. And the spike protein, once it gets into your body, your cells, if they're instructed genetically, will make the spike protein. For how long, Erica? How long will your body continue to make spike protein around the clock, your body cells? What's the potential?
I think it could be indefinitely. You know, once a cell has been transfected with this mRNA, it depends, you know, how quickly your body can recognize that and generate the enzymes needed to break it down. Now, bear in mind, this is synthetic mRNA. It's been modified so that it can resist that enzyme,
right.
So it can persist even longer. So as long as a cell is transfected, it can keep producing spike protein indefinitely.
And we do have some indication that the amount of spike increases over time. There has been that proposed as well from scientists. All right.
Investigational, an experiment on humanity. And that's what they're doing, and I'm showing you why. Spike is a toxin, crosses the blood-brain barrier. Kind of like my brain cells to be where they are and not be blown apart, right? So why in the world would we put a toxin into the human body that's going to disrupt the blood vessels in your brain, allow the spike in there, it'll cause inflammation. The brain fog you hear about from the COVID patients, guess what? You hear about it in the post-vaccinated damaged individuals as well. But no, nobody's hurt by the shot. There's not been one death. There's not been one injury. That's what they tell you. It's a lie. And this is science. Okay, here we go. That's all the blue on top. Those are brain cells. All the blue doesn't belong there. That's inflammation from the spike. What about the kiddos? Heart inflammation. Guess what? Lots of ACE2 receptors in the heart. Here you can see on the left-hand side, see those blue arrows around the white? That's inflammation in the heart. That's not normal. That's after a shot. That's a spike protein landing there. That's your immune system attacking your own tissues. See on the right, that's the red arrows. That's the pericardium, the sac that surrounds your heart. That's inflammation. That doesn't belong there. Once you have heart damage, the heart does not heal itself. Okay, left-hand side, all the blue dots, inflammation. See that gray in the middle? That's early scarring. Guess what? Once a heart cell is damaged, it's damaged forever. It doesn't replace itself with another heart cell. It replaces itself with a scar. So you tell me you want to give a 12-year-old, a 5-year-old, a 13-year-old, an 18-year-old a shot, and we see about a 200 times increase in myocarditis in our society right now? That's a good idea. Let's give a kid a toxin, ruin his heart for life. Stop and think about what we're doing. Insanity. We need to stop the insanity immediately. This is over. Game over. This is no longer good science. This is a poisonous attack on our population, and it needs to stop now.
You can see this video on the right side of the homepage in the archive, a pathologist's summary of what these jabs do to the brain and other organs. It's right there. You'll find it. You can look at the pictures.
Kidney, same thing. Kidneys are kind of important. Three things in life. Blood goes round and round. Got to breathe. Got to make pee. You don't do those three things, you die. Kidney, you want to damage your kidney with a clot shot? Not a good idea either. Liver, kind of need your liver to detoxify everything in your life. Same thing. Damage to the liver. See all that blue? That's inflammation. Doesn't belong there. Testes, kind of important for the next generation, right? As much as that looks like a lovely heart, see all the blue in it? Inflammation. Same thing in the ovaries. Here's the problem. Essentially absent from the literature, what are they hiding from us? Okay. Japanese biodistribution study took some doing to find this study. Dr. Bridle up in Canada, and of course he was attacked for telling the truth. the lipid nanoparticle that surrounds the little mRNA they're injecting into people's bodies. Yes, a lot of it stays in the deltoid, but it's...
This is the lipid, toxic lipid nanoparticle that Erica mentioned that surrounds the mRNA synthetic virus that is injected into the body, carrying spike proteins with it. Lipid nanoparticles. Nobody's talking about this, Erica. It's not making much news
at
all.
Well, I think, yeah, people are not clear on how the lipid nanoparticle is contributing to this toxicity. But it's a carrier for the mRNA, so and it can transfect any cell that it bumps up against. You know, a normal virus can only transfect or infect a cell that has the relevant receptor. With lipid nanoparticles, they can infect any cell. All they got to do is bump up against the cell membrane and fuse with that membrane because it's fatty. And then it enters the cell through what they call endocytosis. So it merges with the cell and then dumps its payload. And it can happen wherever that lipid nanoparticle goes. And as the Japanese biodistribution study showed, it has a these lipid nanoparticles have a strong proclivity for the ovary. So now, yeah, the ovaries, or the eggs in the ovaries, can be transfected with this genetic material with unknown consequences.
And you think, any of you out there, any longer, that these people behind this evil didn't know all this? They knew everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's as well. Yep. Guess where it likes to concentrate? A really biologically active organ, the ovary. And in the Pfizer paperwork and application, it clearly states that in the rats, there was a 16% decrease in fertility. One of the most fertile little critters, mammals on the planet. And these are not the droids you're looking for, never mind. So what's it doing to humanity? Guess what? The answer is, we don't know. Because we don't have long-term safety data yet. That's the tragedy and the crime in all of this. They're pushing it. It's an experiment. It's emergency authorized. It's not approved. We don't. Humanity is the phase 3 trial. COVID's a clotting disease, as some of my colleagues have mentioned. After a shot, we as physicians, especially if patients complaining of post-vaccine symptoms, a D-dimer will go up when we have clots. We can't see these clots on X-ray or scan. These are microclots. All these inflammatory patterns that I'm showing you are from microclots as well. If we look at this in the patients, we know that they're microclotting. So this is something Dr. Nordhausen, just like Dr. Ursa mentioned, patient who has already had COVID, COVID recovered, broad, beautiful immunity. They're lying to you to say that it's not equal to a vaccine immunity. I love the blue pen rainbow analogy Dr. Ursa gave. Screened before vaccine, there's a multiple-fold increase risk of adverse reactions. If you've had COVID and are recovered, you get a shot, you hyper-rev that immune system, you may be screwed and or dead. All right, I'm going to reiterate, one cannot find that for which they do not look. Billions of dollars spent on advertising of, again, a toxin into the human body. Investigational vaccines. Again, I will say to our agencies, our federal government, where's the funding for real science? They don't want you to see what we're seeing. In the laboratory, I have the tissues of a dead man on the back of my desk. I have two more coming next week. Guess what? Just a couple days after a shot. 50-year-old healthy triathlete. One of my favorite surgeons in town that I worked with, second shot, mountain biking gone. All right, the other concern I already brought up, we have no long-term safety data. This is what we need to emphasize to society and ask the authoritative agencies. What's the risk for cancer after the shot? We don't know. What's the risk for autoimmune disease? We don't know. What's the risk for impairing fertility for a lifetime? We don't know. So why in the world will we willy-nilly push forward at the pace and the rate that we're going without knowing these things? Complete anti-science and a complete attack on us. No more mandatory forcing of employees. How in the world are these hospitals and these employers saying, you can't work for me if you don't sign up to be a subject in an experiment on humanity? Go go back to the 1947 Nuremberg Code. We're absolutely violating this as a nation and a people. Where are the billions to do the autopsies? Where are the billions to prove the science? Where are the autopsies? I will go back. Crickets. They're not there. Dismissal by the collusive media of any adverse events or death. That's a problem. And what happened to the concept of the Me Too movement? Believe everybody. What happened to believe her? Believe the story. What happened to believe anyone? Why won't they believe the science? They won't believe the science. They dismiss the science. What happened to this movement of believe it until you can disprove it? Gone. Gone. All right, a couple side-by-side notes. Really critically, and I'm almost out of time, what we're seeing in the laboratory is the shots dysregulate your immune response. We have very important cells that keep other viruses in check, that keep cancers in check. There's a type of cell called a CD8 killer T cell. Well, there's a study out of Germany and the Netherlands that showed a shifted immune profile. And at the end, their conclusion was, we see a concerning pattern of the cells we normally need to fight off these other things. But the answer is, we don't know for how long that shifted pattern lasts. It's like having eight blockers on the front line. This is Texas, we can talk football. Having eight blockers on the front line and paralyzing three or four of them. But the answer is, we don't know if they're paralyzed for the rest of the game or the rest of their career. And then what we see from this in the laboratory is an uptick of herpes family viruses, molluscum, human papillomavirus, all sorts of viruses, mononucleosis, etc., reactivating at levels, and I'm a pathologist, so we see this in the laboratory, and I'm seeing the early signal. Well, guess what else that CD8 cell does? And some receptors on some of these T cells called toll-like receptors, and there's a certain pattern of them. They keep cancer in check. I have seen a 10 to 20-fold increase of uterine cancer in the last 6 months in my laboratory. And I keep data year to year to year. In the last 6 months, when did we start the shots? January. How much solid tumor cancer increase are we going to see over the next several years? Probably a lot. What's the real answer? We don't know. And sometimes that's the most honest answer in medicine, is we don't know. A doctor that tells you he or she knows everything, don't believe him. Find a new doctor. Increase of latent viruses, et cetera, et cetera. So anyway, I know I'm out of time for questions. Thank you so much.
Okay. Very good insight by a pathologist who deals with evidence, science, every day in his lab. Erica, go ahead.
Yeah, he summed it up very well, very succinctly. It mirrors everything I've been observing in social media groups as to what people are reporting. The immune dysregulation is very real. The question is it seems to be spilling over into the unvaxxed as well, which leads me to think that whatever coding is in these mRNA shots also codes for some sort of immune suppression, such as that interferon pathway that I had mentioned earlier. He mentions the CD8 cells. That would be typical of people that have been vaxxed. I'm not sure that same scenario would be happening, that same sort of immune dysregulation would be happening in the unvaxxed. But certainly the depletion of the interferon, I think, could be transmitted with that mRNA in the form of exosomes that the NVAX may be acquiring and suffering from as well.
Exosomes, you better define that again and how they're being shed or spread by the vaxxed.
Yeah, exosomes are little packages of genetic material produced by your cells, or perhaps in the case of these lipid nanoparticles, the lipid nanoparticles contain the mRNA, so they would act similar to an exosome and could exit the body through the same pathways. Saliva, urine, sweat, breath, into the environment where they can be uptaken by other organisms, humans, animals. And whether or not they have a biological effect, it appears that they are in this particular instance.
Now, we've mentioned firsthand direct exosomic or other transmissions, shedding by the vaxxed to the unvaxxed. We don't know if there's secondhand shedding by the unvaxxed who are being impacted, again, on a dose-dependent basis, by the vaxxed. But secondhand transmission cannot be discounted at this point, can it?
No. That's going to be harder to detect.
Right.
But let's go back to the study that came out, or it was a paper that came out in May of last year talking about these transmissible vaccines, as if they were purely theoretical at the time. There was a distinction made between a transferable vaccine and a transmissible vaccine, where a transferable vaccine would only be transferred to the first line of contact with the vaccinee, and a transmissible vaccine would go from person to person to person. It would
keep going.
It wouldn't be limited to the first level of exposure, first round of people exposed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the good thing is, if it is a transmissible one that can pervade into the population, these things generally weaken with each passage through a host. So the likelihood that this thing will gain steam and get worse or spread like wildfire is probably not that likely. But the fact is that we have so many people getting vaxxed, that just increases the unvaxxed exposure, you know, exponentially, because what are we at, 70% now? They're pushing for more. So
yeah.
Sooner or later, we're going to come into contact, if we haven't already, with vaxxed people. It's going to become routine.
I think it's happening already. I think you're quite
certainly.
Right.
Certainly. Unless you live like a hermit, it's happening.
Yeah. Yeah. Go to the store. Go anywhere. Anytime you're around other people, there are things that you could potentially pick up. And it's all, again, dose dependent. How much are you around other people?
I have to wonder, with this URA-3665, that we still don't know what it is. There's some speculation maybe it's uranium, but I'm thinking, no, it's probably a piece of some kind of truncated RNA, meaning a piece of RNA from the shot that somehow is getting into the environment, probably through exosomes, and being uptaken by the non-vaxxed. And the 3665 may correspond to the gene. They've given this number, numerical number, 3665. It corresponds to interferon regulating factor 7. Now, that may be the gene or the code that downregulates your interferon. So if the unvaxxed are acquiring that, then they're going to be immune suppressed and susceptible to whatever.
Got it. Okay. All right. Here's a little short 5-minute video I want to get this into, trying to honor these doctors who are standing up. This guy is speaking in front of a school board, the Mount Vernon Community School Corporation. What the hell is that? Maybe it isn't a school board. It's some other kind of an educational corporation. Anyway, this gentleman is up there speaking. I haven't heard this, so I'm looking forward to this. It's rather short.
Have chosen to ignore the very science that they paid to have done. That is why you keep struggling with this, is because you cannot make these viruses go away. The natural history of all respiratory viruses is that they circulate all year long, waiting for the immune system to get sick through the winter or become deranged, as has happened recently with these vaccines, and then they cause symptomatic disease. Because they cannot be filtered out, and they have animal reservoirs, and this is a very important point, no one can make this virus go away. The CDC has managed to convince everybody that we can handle this like we did smallpox, where we could make a virus go away. Smallpox had no animal reservoirs. The only thing it learned to infect was humans. That's why we were able to make that virus go away. That will not happen with this any more than it will with influenza, the common cold, respiratory syncytial virus, adenoviral respiratory syndromes, or anything else that has animal reservoirs. So the reason you can't do this is because you're trying to do something which has already been tried and can't be done. Equally important is that vaccination changes none of this, especially with this vaccine. And I would hope this board would start asking itself, before it considers taking the advice of the CDC, the NIH, and the State Board of Health, why we are doing things about this that we didn't do for the common cold, influenza, or respiratory syncytial virus. And then ask yourself, why is a vaccine that is supposedly so effective having a breakout in the middle of the summer when respiratory viral syndromes don't do that? And to help you understand that, you need to know the condition that is called antibody-mediated viral enhancement. That is a condition done when vaccines work wrong, as they did in every coronavirus study done in animals on coronaviruses after the SARS outbreak, and done in respiratory syncytial virus, where a vaccine used in a vulnerable individual done the wrong way, which cannot be done right for a respiratory virus which has a very low pathogenicity rate, causes the immune system to actually fight the virus wrong and let the virus become worse than it would with native infection. And that is why you're seeing an outbreak right now. In fact, in that flash drive you're going to have coming to you and in the emails with six extra, there will be a study showing that 75% of people who had COVID-19 positive symptom cases in Barnstable, Massachusetts outbreak were fully vaccinated. Therefore, there is no reason for treating any person vaccinated any differently than any person unvaccinated. You should also know that no vaccine, even the ones I support and would give to myself and my children, ever stops infection. In 2014, there was an outbreak of mumps in the National Hockey League. The only people who came down the symptoms were the people who were unvaccinated or unknown vaccine status. Boy, that sounds like a great argument for vaccines. But a question that you should ask yourself, knowing that half of the people who came down with symptomatic disease had no contact with an unvaccinated or unknown vaccine status individual, where did they get the disease? And the answer was from the vaccinated individuals. No vaccine prevents you from getting infection. You get infected, you shed pathogen. This is especially true of viral respiratory pathogens. You just don't get symptomatic from it. So you cannot stop spread. You cannot make these numbers that you've planned on get better by doing any of the things you're doing, because that is the nature of viral respiratory pathogens. And you can't prevent it with a vaccine because they don't do the very thing you're wanting them to do. And you will be chasing this the remainder of your life until you recognize that the Center for Disease Control and the Indiana State Board of Health are giving you very bad scientific guidance. And instead, read the articles that are going to come on the email and are on this flash drive, and listen to the people in this audience here tonight who actually have recognized the advice they are getting from the CDC and the NIH is counterfactual. And that's why you're still fighting this with this vaccine that supposedly was going to make all of this go away, but has suddenly managed to make an outbreak of COVID-19 develop in the middle of the summer when vitamin D levels are at their highest. By the way, the other thing that would be necessary, any vaccine restriction to be considered, is if there were no other treatment available. And I can tell you, having treated over 15 COVID-19 patients, that between active loading with vitamin D, ivermectin, and zinc, that there is not a single person who has come anywhere near the hospital. And we already have studies that show that if you achieve a 25 hydroxy vitamin D level greater than 55, your risk of COVID-19 death will drop down to one quarter of the population average for the United States. And there are active treatment trials included on that flash drive that show the same is true. So if you were going to discriminate based upon vaccine, you should also discriminate based upon 25 hydroxy vitamin D level, zinc taste test response, and probably previous infection, since there are also studies on that flash drive that show that people who have recovered from COVID-19 infection actually get no benefit from vaccination at all, no reduction in symptoms, no reduction in hospitalization, and suffer 2 to 4 times the rate of side effects if they are subsequently vaccinated. Therefore, the policies that you are basing on are totally counterfactual. I don't blame this board for that, because I know you aren't scientists and you've thought it was reasonable to listen to the CDC, NIH, and the Indiana State Board of Health. But I would encourage that instead you listen to the people out here in this audience and read what's on that data drive. And if anybody here in this board has any questions about anything on that, I will happily come back and sit with you individually if you would like to explain the science behind this. And if you're worried about being sued by somebody because you don't follow the guidance of the CDC and the NIH, I will tell you, have a free pro bono expert testimony at your disposal. I will testify in defense of this board, turning down all these recommendations for free at any time in any court. Thank you.
Okay. Very nice to see that in front of an apparent school board or any forum like that. Final comment, Erica. We've covered a lot of ground tonight. Very, very important material.
Yeah, so we have numerous experts all saying the same thing, all in stark contradiction to revered Fauci. We'll see what it gets us.
Utterly the inverse of what the CDC, NIAID, it's awful. Awful what's going on. I just wonder what's ahead. We'll follow it for you. And I'm afraid this fall is going to show a lot of people coming down with some very major and diverse illnesses. And again, others, like we mentioned early tonight, just fading away. No autopsies,
yep.
So we won't know. Thank you, Erica, very much for all your contributions.
Oh, my pleasure, Jeff. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Good night.
Good night.
Okay. We'll be back tomorrow. Lots to think about. Take care, prepare, and be well.